Okay, let's start. So welcome to this session about WPF and WPF business applications modernization. So first of all, you probably are going to be hearing quite a lot, probably here in TechEd and also in Build as well, about applications patterns evolution and coming from established patterns where we have client, desktop, PCs, and servers, and evolving towards devices and services. Any kind of devices and services and the cloud and Windows Azure and so on. And we are making a lot of noise about that. But I wanted to ask you about this. So what about your current Windows applications that you are currently developing today? So I'd like to ask you, how many of you are currently, today, developing Windows Store apps or Windows Phone apps? Can you raise your hand? Okay, just a few, probably minority. And how many of you are currently developing, is it working? WPF or WinForms applications for desktop? Yeah, the majority. So that's why I thought this was a good session we had to talk about. Cool. So first of all, let me introduce myself. My name is Cesar de la Torre, and I work as .NET product manager for the DevTools division in Redmond in Seattle. It's within the Visual Studio and .NET product groups. You have there my contact. If you have any questions about this session later on, feel free to send me an email. And let's start. So the agenda here is basically, I'll get into the details of the agenda, but basically talk about existing technologies that you can use and modernize your WPF application. So the details of the agenda is like putting WPF into perspective, what's new in .NET. I'm going to talk also a little bit about what's new in .NET 4.5.1. And then quite a few assets or points that it is important to take into account when developing modern WPF applications, like model view, view modern pattern, portable class libraries, services, and then enhancing touch in WPF applications with partners controls and also custom code that I'll be showing you. So first of all, WPF for desktop applications. It is really what we have today, and it is the best technology to create desktop business applications using C# or using VB.NET. Then, regarding WPF, you can also, the beauty of WPF is that it is not just WPF, but you can have the whole power of .NET. So anything you have new in .NET, you can use it also in WPF. So that's why you are able to use async await in WPF for smoother user experience, or entity framework, or portable class libraries, or the new immutable collection in the base class library. And then it is fully supported in Windows 8. So that's really important. And also regarding deployment, you have click once and bootstrapper, so you don't really need anymore to have the whole .NET installed in the client, but it can detect what it needs, and then you can download what you need. And then, this is something I want to highlight, which is if you are a .NET developer or WPF developer, the important point here are about your skill sets. So if you know .NET and XAML, you can create WPF applications, or you could move easily and create a Windows Phone application in .NET and XAML, or a Windows Store, Windows 8 application using .NET on XAML, or even using C# and create web applications. And even further, because this is just about Microsoft technologies, but even further, you can also create non-Microsoft apps for iOS and Android using Xamarin. We already delivered a session called Modernizing Windows Applications with our partners. So using Xamarin, you can reuse C# code and your knowledge and create other applications in non-Microsoft devices. So skill sets in .NET and C# is great. You can create any kind of application or even .NET micro framework. Another point I'd like to highlight is, and this is like a change in the trend of our current development of .NET, is that .NET is not just the .NET framework, like a big and large framework, but it is more an ecosystem. And you will see starting now in .NET 4.5.1 that we're going to have a continuous evolution. It's going to be a shorter cadence for Visual Studio, but also for .NET. And then the core of .NET is going to shrink, but then we're going to have many more sub-frameworks and NuGet packages and everything evolving autonomously, so it's going to be evolving much faster. And then what's new in .NET? Because anything new in .NET, you're going to be able to use it in WPF. So in .NET 4.5, that was a few months ago in September, we had new stuff available for .NET and therefore for WPF, like async await, so you can develop code like asynchronous code, but it's going to look like it is synchronous while writing it, but then it's going to be asynchronous while executing. Or portable class library that I'm gonna show you later on another example. Zip compression, Bootstrapper, and then WPF 4.5. We had a few different assets like async data validation, binding to static properties, and so on. So my first demo is going to be about async await in WPF. In case you don't know it, but before going to that demo, I also wanted to show you what we just announced, which is what's new in .NET Framework 4.5.1 preview, because this is a preview. The final version will be released in a few months. And so if you go to, it is online to the blog .NET, to the .NET blog, you'll see what's new. So I'd like to highlight just a few things, like edit and continue in 64 bits, or also my demo is going to be about async await, so the debugging for async aware is much better now in this version. And also, there's another topic really interesting, ADR.NET connection resiliency. So that's really, I mean, this is critical and really important, especially if you are developing .NET services or .NET applications for Windows Azure, where in SQL Azure, because of the load balancing, the connection sometimes is drops and it's going to a different server and so on. So now it's going to be transparent. So there are quite a few points that are new in .NET 4.5, and therefore you can use it also in the WPF. So my first demo is going to be about async await. So I've got this is a sample application I also used in my other session. If you wanna hear the whole story, you can see my recorded session about small and medium sized business applications or mission critical applications. And then I was focusing quite a lot in the services side and website, but the sample application is the same, and we have here several clients, like a Windows 8 client, Windows Phone client, and WPF. So in this session, I'm going to use a lot the WPF application or client. So I'm going to run this WPF application, which is underneath talking to a service, Web API service. This is the the web application. And then if I run, I'm going to run just the WPF application. So it's kind of a modern style, but it is WPF, as you can tell here. Okay. So, it's talking to services, getting data. It's about conferences. You can create a conference and update it, and whatever this application should be, or it is intended to be used by the conference creator or the owner of the conferences. But in any case, the demo is that when I'm refreshing the top tags here, right now it's synchronous. So when I refresh, I cannot do anything. Now it's done, and I can start doing other tasks or whatever. But it is synchronous. So if I go ahead and change my code, which is here in the view models, in the main desktop view model. So here you can see that when I'm reloading the top text, right now it is calling a method which is synchronous. It's this method. It's just this one. It's just calling to the web service, and we have a sleep 3 seconds, so you can feel that it is working. But then if we executed the asynchronous code, which is this method, and here you can see that we are using the await key. So if I execute this example again, so the code is pretty simple. It's almost the same. So when you are programming, it's like if it looks like it is synchronous, but then it's executing asynchronous. And I'm gonna execute the WPF. Right. We're using Facebook login and so on. So you see that now when I refresh here, I can move the window, and then it's referencing, so everything is going to be smoother. You could call any other task or whatever. Okay. So let's move on. And next topic is about model view model. This is not really something new, but I thought that it is important to focus on it and highlight it, because it is really important in a WPF application to have a separation of concerns. So you have views and just SAML on one side, no code behind, and then all your presentation layer logic is going to be within the view models. And that's something, important point. But another important point is try to put all your business logic in the server side using services like web API services. Because if you do that, then in the future, if you want to migrate that application to a Windows Store application, or even simultaneously you want to have a phone application or a web application, everything is going to be, I mean, you will be able to reuse it. So that's the two points I wanted to highlight. So let's move and show you a demo about model view model. So here in our example, in the WPF desktop application, I do have a few views, like you can see here. All the SAML views I've got. So one example is the conference schedule. So here is just about SAML, XML. So there are probably two topics here important. One is about binding to your model, using data binding from SAML to your model, which could be object graph, classes, or entity framework. And then also using the using the interface in order to get to the actions. And then you have all the view models, like the conference schedule view model I've got here. So here we've got all the methods, all the presentation lawyer business logic, or in this case, in that method, is loading the sessions. So we are calling to a method where we are then calling the service, the web API service. In this case, we are not directly calling the service, but using an intermediate assembly, which is a portable class library that I'm going to talk about that later on. So that portable class library, which is client-side, could be reused between different clients, like a WPF or phone or different clients. So basically, I wanna highlight the importance of separation of concerns, and because if we go to any view, you'll see that we saw SAML, but then in code behind, we just have a single line of code where we are providing the model. Could be an entity model, entity framework model, whatever, but it is a single line. Then everything, all the code is in the view model. Okay. Let's move on. So next asset or next subject I want to highlight is about portable libraries. So a portable library is a library project where you have just classes, but when it is compiled, it is compatible with the different .NET frameworks we have. Like it could run on a WPF application, .dll, .assembly, or it could run for Windows Phone or ASP.NET or any different .NET framework available. So you see even Xbox 360 or Silverlight or Windows Store. That's something that you could know, but something that I think that it is really important is the portable class library NuGet package, because then we are evolving that the functionality of the portable libraries. And for instance, you can enrich different sub-frameworks with PCL. For instance, when we released the PCL, HTTP client or async await, it was not available in the .NET SDK for Windows Phone. But if you use portable class library within the new NuGet packages that you are getting and you can download and use in your project, then you are enriching the different sub-frameworks. Like you can use HTTP client now for Windows Phone or different functionality or features that we have in portable libraries for the other sub-frameworks. I just want to show you the portable library I'm using here in this example. So this project was the WPF project, and then whenever I'm calling to a web service, I'm going through this portable library, which is, it is called My Conferences API Client. So here, it is just a class library, but it is compatible with different frameworks, so I'm reusing this library, compile library from WPF or from Windows Store or from Windows Phone clients that we have in this example. So in this case, we are using it just for calling services. Like if I go to the session service, you see that this method, the get all sessions async, and then it is calling doGet, which could be using HTTP web request class or HTTP client in order to call web API services. But like I said, if you go to the properties of the portable class library, you can see that you can target .NET Framework or Silverlight or Windows Phone or higher versions or Windows applications or even Xbox 360. Right, and you can see that here in my references, in the WPF application, I've got here the reference to my conferences, API client, or in this other project, which is a Windows Store application, like Metro style, we have here the same reference to my portable class library. So in a few moments, after talking about web services, I will run it, and you'll see that we are, in fact, reusing the same library, and you'll see the breakpoints and where it is stopping. So then, this is what I mean. Connecting a modern WPF application to a modern service. So about services, I'm going to focus on HTTP services. So this is something I like to highlight, and it is like the official vision of Microsoft, is if you are going to create a service, by default, if it is HTTP, try to use a web API, ASP.NET web API. That is kind of the future when Microsoft is going to be investing a lot. Then if for any reason you cannot use web API, like maybe you are creating a different kind of service, it is not HTTP, but it is for any reason, it is you need TCP or name pipes or even MSMQ or different things that maybe are not available in the web API, then go for WCF and the different options you have in WCF. But the beauty about web API is that it is extremely simple and highlight and performant. So that's why it is really recommended. Also, in future, you're going to be able to run web API services, and that's something new, out of IIS using OWIN and Kadana, which are the beta names of your own lightweight web service. That's all what it said. And of course, because it is a standard, it is HTTP, REST, OData, or you could be using JSON as data format, etc. You can reuse that service from any client, whether it is .NET, WPF, web, iPhone, Android, whatever. Okay. So let's see. Let's take a look to our services. In our example, so here we've got the server side. So we have this project, which is a web project, but also it is a web API project. So if we go to the controllers, going to the conferences controller, this one, you see it is a web API service. This is my service, and it is an API controller. And then here is pretty simple. I mean, you just need a bunch of methods. In this case, we are using also dependency injection for all the repositories, all the dependencies. But web API by itself, I mean, it's just a bunch of methods and could be, like in this case, REST, like using the HTTP verbs, like post, put, etc. And you can also use attributes for authorization, and so on. So those methods are going to be reused between different clients that we're going to be running now. So for instance, I'm going to run now the web application. So this application, in my other session, I'm talking quite a lot about that. It is a single-page application. So most of the code here is about JavaScript and the JavaScript frameworks, Knockout, Durandal framework, and so on. And when you are navigating here, you see that there's a transition. It is not reloading the whole page. It's just going to different views, but everything is smooth and so on. So I want to show you what methods I'm executing. Like if I go to this conference, and then with F12, I just want to see what I'm calling underneath. So from jQuery calling to my Web API services, you see that when I press and I go to view conference schedule, this is the method that we executed. So you can see it here. So we're calling the Web API service and the get conference by ID and ID 4. So if I, well, you can see here all the JSON data that is traveling through the network, or we could even go and grab it, paste in the URL. So because using REST services and Web API, you can use just the URL. So if I put it here, you see I can open it, and I get all the data that is traveling through the network. Okay. So this same service that I'm calling from the web, the same service is being called from my WPF application. So if I go to my WPF application here, it is using the same web services. I can go manage conferences and edit like sessions. And you see, this is a breakpoint I've got in the server side, in the Web API service. So you see this is the view model. And then once I'm going ahead and calling the web service, now, yeah, here we are in the Web API service. You see here, API controller. And then down below, we have this method where I'm using a repository, getting all the data. Underneath, it is using entity framework and entity link you to entities. And then we get same data. Or the beauty about having the portable libraries, the client side, and also web services is that I can also reuse the same code from a Windows Store application, for instance. So if I execute our Windows Store application, which is this one, you see now this is we need to authenticate in Facebook. So this is a Windows Store application. Touch, and you can get into any conference, and then you see the same method in the Web API service, the session service here. This is gonna call now, and then this is calling to the repository on the same service, and then we've got all the data scrolling here, touch, etc. Okay. Right, let's move on with different stuff for modernizing WPF. SignalR. So this is a new kind of service we can use for web applications, but also for .NET and WPF. So SignalR is real-time communication. So you can have a bunch of clients communicating between them. On the server, like a push communication, real time, And underneath it is using WebSockets or any other fallback. Because WebSockets in the web is supported by a few browsers. But in the case if you're using the .NET client library, it will be using WebSockets. So we can use SignalR also in WPF applications. It is an open source license and available. So I think the best way to know and to check what is SignalR, if you don't know it, is through a demo. So let's move again. Right. So in this case, I've got another example, another demo. So I'm going to run it, and we're going to communicate in real time between a service, SignalR service, and different clients. One client is going to be web client in Internet Explorer, and the other client is going to be WPF. And we're going to communicate in real time between web clients and WPF. So if I run the application, now the web API, the SignalR service is running now. And now this is one of the clients. So you see this is Square there. I'm going to run another client more with the same URL. Let's put it here. And now I'm going to run the WPF client. So this is the WPF project. Let's run it. Right? So you see, this is web, Internet Explorer, but this is a WPF application. It is a regular Windows application. And when I move this, like let's start here. When I move this square, it is moving in real time in the any other number of clients in web, but also in WPF. Okay, so yeah, you could see, well, Cesar is able to move a square. Well, think about any other case like where you need real time communications, like in stocks or whatever, right? Where you want to push to millions and millions of users in real time communication. So this SignalR has been tested for high scalability and millions of users. So let's take a look to the code, which is pretty simple. This is a very quick demo about SignalR and the WPF or the .NET SignalR library. But if you want to know more about SignalR, there was a single session in TechEd about SignalR. So you can get more knowledge about that. But here we have, so first of all, we need the SignalR service, which is this one. And you can see that it is basically a class, but we are deriving that class from Hub. And then we have a few methods, like we have the move shape, so whenever any client is moving, in this case a shape, the square, we're calling to this web API service, and then we're going to push and say that to the other clients to move. Like in here, this is the magical line, clients, others, shape move, and XY coordinates, and all the rest of the clients are going to move, right? So I'm not sure if you can see it properly, this line. You can send that just to the other clients or could be to all. You can see here others, all except, or all. But usually it's going to be just, or even to the caller, but usually it's going to be to the others, because if you are doing something in one point, you just want to tell the others that you moved, right? And then you have also other methods about the connection or reconnection, where you can implement like authorization, security, validations here or here, right? And then we have the client side. So if the application is a web client side, then you get to use JavaScript and a library for JavaScript. But if, like in this case, we're talking about WPF, what we need is to use the SignalR client library, right? You can see here. And then once you have that, it is pretty simple. You can go to your, in this case, main window. And what we're doing here is when the shape is draggable, so whenever it is moving, we are calling to the shape client, which is our library, communicating to SignalR service, and we're saying that the shape is moved. And then when we're moving the shape, we are calling the we're moving the canvas and so on. But in reality, the magic is happening here within this class, the SignalR shape client. And here you can see that we're using the hub connection. We're creating the connection here. That's the URL to our SignalR client. And then we are monitoring the service. So whenever the service is saying someone moved something, in this case, then we are going to move and call to call our method safeMove, and then our shape is going to move, or vice versa. If we are moving our own shape, then we are going to call habInvoke, and then the action or the ID we need to pass. And it's that simple. Something important is, because it is based on HTTP, it can scale a lot. It seems it is a connection, but it is not, because HTTP is not really a connection-oriented protocol. So because it is, in reality, stateless, you can have many servers and services, like a web farm of SignalR services in Windows Azure, and it will scale out, until the limit you want. It's not like you have just a single server with the connection, and then you cannot scale out. You can have any number of services in different servers in order to scale out to millions of users. Okay? So let's talk now about WPF and Windows 8. So I want to make clear that Windows 8 is the best operating system, Windows operating system for touch, okay? And then if you are going to create a touch application, like for a tablet, I want to make clear that probably the best experience, if that application is going to be created from scratch, et cetera, is going to be a Windows Store application. But sometimes, for any reason, you cannot create a Windows Store application for tablet and so on, and you would like to use a WPF application for touch for any reason, like could be that you need to call local resources or a database directly or any feature that you cannot do in Windows Store applications, or because you already have the application and in WPF, and you are modernizing that application, and you don't want to create a Windows Store application from scratch. So in order to have a WPF application, a better support for touch, we have partners that they are providing many touch controls. We have three partners here: Infragistics, Telerik, and DevSprex, but you have many more. We chose those three just because they provided us a few demos that I'm going to show you now with touch controls for WPF. Okay. So the order doesn't mean anything. It's just random. The order I'm going to show the demos, it's okay. So let's show you those demos about controls. So, if First of all, I'm going to show you DevExpress demo with quite a few controls. So in this case, I'm going to use just my fingers. So I'm not using now the mouse. So you can see we're going to a different area of the application. You can scroll smoothly. You can find a house for this application about buying houses and prices and so on. I'm going to select this house, which is similar to mine. In Redmond in the US, you can see photos. Well, I wish I had that kitchen, but I don't. You can see the agents. Oops. And everything is touch with different sizes or statistics. You can spin this. You can see charts here and information while touching on top of the chart and so on. So when we are going to a touch application, really we need special controls and specially made for touch input. Another example is coming from Infragistics. In this case, this is quite impressive as well. Again, I'm using my fingers, so I'm for zooming, like seeing here North America. I can add airline traffic here, and then we can see the animation. I was told that information about the planes it is real data, real old data, but it is real. Or we can add earthquakes, and we can zoom out and see all the earthquakes and so on. So, and it is pretty easy to move and see different views of the data by touching. Okay. And finally, another example, quite nice, with tens of different controls. It's coming from Telerik. So most of those controls are, they have like two sides. You can use it with the mouse, so they are specially rendered for the mouse and keyboard, like right now. Or I can switch to touch. So here you see all the different controls. And now I'm using just my finger. So for instance, I can go to the image editor, which is a good example. Right, and again, you can switch to the mouse mode in real time. So now it is like specially made for the mouse, or I can switch to touch, and then you see all the buttons are bigger. So there's no problem using your finger. So it is big enough, or I can zoom using my fingers as well. Flip it, or let's go to a different example. All controls. There's a nice spreadsheet. And again, it can be used with the mouse and rendered for the mouse and a keyboard, or I can switch to touch if it is running in a tablet. So all the buttons are bigger. Like I can select this. I can change the color or whatever. So I think it's really important, if you are going to create a WPF application for touch, to use specially made controls for that. So let's move on. So be sure to visit our partners and their sites and check what they have. And then, another thing that you can use if your WPF application is running on a Windows 8 machine and then it is touch are the Windows 8 toast notifications. So you see it's like that notification you're seeing here, similar to the notification you can get using Outlook. But this is part of Windows 8. So you can get that notification for any reason. I think that a perfect case use is using SignalR and this Windows 8 toast notification. So when your client application is being notified by any event, you would get this toast. You can use that from the Windows Store or desktop application. So I'm gonna show you a demo about that with custom code that we created. Yep. So I'm just gonna run it first, and then I'll show you the code. So this is a very small example. It is a WPF application. So when I show the toast, or could be because of an event, you see here the toast. And if I click on it, you can see that I'm using that event. And so I know that the user clicked on that toast. Or if I run it again and then the user discard this toast, you see here that the user dismissed the toast, right? So about the code is pretty easy. But because this is part of Windows 8 internally and the internal SDK, we are using really common interop. So you need to have like a class helper, which is using common interop and com import. And then you see very ugly code calling to com, but you don't really need to use that. It's just a class you're going to have the first time, and then you're going to use it like from .NET, right? So then here, this is our window, and the window code we have, and we just need to, let's put it that way. We just need to use the toast notification manager, and then just configure the information we want for the toast or the image, and then we can use the different events I was showing you a few minutes ago, like activated or dismissed or failed, and then just activate the toast when you want. And that's it. It's that simple. It's just a few lines of code. So you can use that in your WPF application. Let's move on to a different subject. So another asset or feature you can use is the touch keyboard, and there's an issue here where you probably noticed that if you're running in a tablet, Windows 8 application, if you're running a Windows Store application, and then you are touching on any input field, and then the keyboard appears, and you can write, et cetera. But the issue in WPF applications or desktop applications is that you can use touch, but when you are touching an input field, like an edit box or something similar, nothing happens when you're touching there. So the user has to be aware that if he wants to use a detached keyboard, he has to go down below and press the little button in order to appear the keyboard, and then he can use it. Okay. So what we did in this code, and we're going to publish this code in my blog and in a few days, and it's pretty simple, is we are using the Windows SDK, so when we click on any edit within your WPF application, the Windows 8 touch keyboard is going to appear automatically. Okay, so and you'll be able to use that code in your apps if you want. So this is what I mean, that when you touch any input field, then the touch keyboard is going to appear, right? So I'm going to show you the demo about that. So let's run it first in our global example. So this is a WPF application. I'm going to run it so you know what I mean. Right, this is a WPF application. And if I go to manage conferences, I can select any conference. This is calling to our web service and so on. And then if I edit any session here, so I'm not going to use now the mouse, because if I use the mouse, the Windows knows that this is just using the mouse or keyboard and so on. But if I use my finger, so it is really touch, you see that when I press here with my finger, then automatically the keyboard is appearing. Okay? Or over here, the same. So this is something that I think you really need in order to have a good user experience, touch user experience in WPF. So I'm going to show you the code. I've got here the same example, but this is the example I'm going to publish in the blog. So it's a very simple WPF application. So you can see just the code about the keyboard. So if I touch a button, a checkbox, or whatever, you see that nothing happens. But when I touch on the input field, the keyboard appears. Okay. Or even if I touch a button, then the keyboard disappears. And before showing you the code, also I wanted to mention that this is based in a Windows service, so that has to be running. It's going to be running in Windows 8. So if for any reason it is not working, probably it is because your service is not working. So you got to check that. It has to be running that Windows service in your client machine. By default, it's going to be running, but if for any reason when you're trying this demo it doesn't work, check the Windows service. So here we are using a library we created using the SDK that we will also publish, which is this one, the Input Panel Configuration Lib. And then with that, and just a few lines of code, you're able to enable the automatic keyboard in your WPF application. But there's a caveat, which is if your application is using inking, like you want to use for drawing or whatever, then it is not compatible. So you have to disable the inking in your application first, and then that is going to work. So that's why we have here this method, disable WPF tablet support. And here we are using the object model for about the tablet and disable inking. And once inking is disabled, then you just need to run these two lines of code, like creating my object of the input panel configuration, and then just enable focus tracking. This is the method that is enabling the touch input in your application. And that's it. It's that simple. Okay, let's close it. So we could cover a lot more, talking about Kinect and WPF or Prism for large composite applications, or even many more controls and coming from partners. But probably what I showed you is the most important topics about how you can modernize your WPF business applications. Moving your code to the server, using model view model, using these techniques for touch input. And then I want to highlight related sessions. Like I said at the beginning, the other session that I made, positioning Microsoft Development Technologies for Custom Application Development. That is, I'm using the same global sample application, but focusing more on the server side, even talking about domain-driven design patterns and repositories and unit of work, services, aggregates, and so on for mission-critical applications. And you could also check the other session about partner solutions for modernizing your .NET application, but it is one of the partners is Xamarin, so you can see how you can use C# code in order to create client applications running on iOS or Android and using C#. Then there are other related hands-on labs, and here you have my contact. So if you have any question about .NET, I can. So my job is .NET product manager, so I can answer that, or I can redirect to if it is a concrete question for a concrete product group, I can redirect that in Redmond to that product group. By the way, here you can see probably for the first time the new .NET logo that we are releasing today and in build. It's going to be just that simple, Microsoft.NET and on a tile. I wanted to have some time for questions you may have about WPF or even .NET or .NET ecosystem. So if you have any question, feel free. And first of all, thanks a lot for your time. Any question? Yeah. Can you we use the mic?
Hello.
Yeah.
In the Windows form, for Windows Phone development, we have a SQL CE as local database.
Yeah.
We can use SQL Compact for desktop and WPF. But what are the Microsoft options for local database for Metro application? Because we can't use anything from Microsoft.
Yeah. So the question is that you can use SQL, a local SQL database, for a desktop application, and the question is, can I use something similar for a Windows Store application or Metro application? And so currently you cannot. So a Windows Store application, you have to call or consume services, but you can call a local database right there, or unless it is within the local storage, and it is not really a database, but maybe XML and so on. And that is precisely maybe one of the reasons because you might want to create a touch WPF application, because maybe for any reason you want to use a local database, maybe because it is an offline application and it is not an online application. So that's a great question, and one of the reasons because you could want to use a WPF application. In the future, things might change, but right now it's that way. I've got, for any questions, Visual Studio badge holder. Any other question? No? Okay. In any case, feel free to ask me any question here, or I'm going to be around the booth, Visual Studio booth in the expo later on or tomorrow, okay? So thanks a lot.